Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another Tech Doctor podcast. Glad to have you with me this afternoon. I'm also glad to have with me from the Massachusetts area, Amy Rule. And many of you probably know Amy from work that she's done in the past, but just in case you don't, Amy, if you would please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Thanks, Robert. First, I want to just say what a wonderful opportunity it is to talk with you and your listeners this afternoon. So thanks for having me on the podcast.
Well, I think I kind of roped you into it, actually, because Amy sent me an email with some ideas for the podcast, and of the belief that no good deed should go unpunished, I told her, well, great, let's just get on the podcast and talk about these ideas. So thank you for being here.
I'm delighted. Thank you. Just to tell you a little bit about myself, I am the president of VIBUG, the Visually Impaired and Blind Computer User Group in Boston. Some of you may recognize my name because I formerly worked for National Braille Press running their Braille literacy program for children. I also, several years ago, ran a business called Amy's Filters and Forwards, which was the predecessor to Top Tech Tidbits that Dean Martineau now runs. So I think people may have heard of me in those contexts. I am an access technology trainer, provide a lot of tech support to folks. I also have been involved recently in making presentations to places like MIT and others around the whole field of access technology and the ways in which mainstream applications can be used and or the ways in which new technologies that could be developed could be helpful to blind and visually impaired people.
Very good. Well, it sounds like there's a lot going on up in your area, and you're heavily involved in a lot of it. I know that I have heard of the VIBUG group for years, and in fact, I remember a long time ago, I don't know if you all still do this, but you used to have access to some of your meetings online. I remember I occasionally participated in one of those or listened to one or two of those years ago, and that still may be going on.
Absolutely, it is. We have about 60 paid members usually every year. Our meetings are open to the public, our brick-and-mortar meetings, as I call them, but we also offer members the opportunity to join us online, which has been wonderful for people who either live sufficiently far from Boston that it's inconvenient to come, or for presenters who sometimes join us virtually. That service, online service, is free only to members and available only to members. But membership is only $20 per year, so it's a pretty good deal. VIBUG has been around for well over 20 years. I believe it started around 1984. I was not involved at that time. I first became involved in around 1996 and have been actively in a leadership role since then.
If someone would like to investigate VIBUG further, maybe sign up for a membership so they can participate in the online part of the meetings, how does one go about that?
Probably the easiest thing to do is to go to our website, which is www.vibug.org, and right on the homepage it will give you instructions. You send a $20 check made payable to VIBUG to our treasurer, and as soon as your membership is received, then I send you the online password.
Great.
We also archive our meetings for those people who can't join us in real time. So we archive edited meeting presentations, and those are open and freely available to everyone. Also, if you're ever in the Boston area, anyone is welcome to come to our meetings. We meet at MIT at 77 Mass Ave in Cambridge in Building 5, Room 134, and we meet on the second Saturday of every month. We previously met at National Braille Press for many years, but about 3 years ago, we moved over to MIT, which has been tremendous for us, both in terms of the facilities available, but more importantly, in terms of the opportunities to connect with and collaborate with a lot of developers and students interested in access technology.
That would be a really fun meeting to attend. I'd like to try to make that one sometime if I ever get up in the Boston area. But tell me a little bit more about what you're doing with MIT. That sounds pretty fascinating, and especially getting students and MIT faculty and so forth involved with access technology. What's that all about?
We are fortunate in that our exposure has increased since we moved to MIT, and we get frequent requests. I probably get 2 or 3 requests a month from students from many colleges and universities, but primarily MIT, because students have project requirements and many of them have become interested in developing products for blind and visually impaired folks. This has given us an opportunity to collaborate, to give them feedback. Last week, for example, we had a group of MIT students come who had developed a prototype of what they called the iRing, and it was a little ring that you wore on your finger with a camera attached to it. And operating the camera, they were able to demonstrate through the use of a phone and an app that they had developed the ability to read currency and identify color. And we gave them a lot of feedback about the things that we thought would be most interesting and helpful to us. We have a group that's developing a tactile digital watch that's in prototype. We were involved several years ago when the folks who made the 6-dot Braille labeler first had that idea. And we also have been working with MIT. There's a professor who actually teaches a course on access technology. And I've had the privilege of speaking both to his students and also to a group of machine design students and professionals as well. So we've really had an opportunity to speak with a lot of different groups about a variety of projects. One of the things that always comes out of those discussions are the things that we identify as primary needs. Indoor navigation assistance, for example, and a good barcode app, portable barcode app. And one of the exciting things that's going to be coming up, I'm hoping in the next few months, is that the MIT folks have developed some intelligence and a prototype of a product that will allow us to navigate and get indoor directions. So we're looking forward to that.
Well, indoor directions is certainly an area that is one that needs a lot of work. And I know Mike May and his group have thought about and worked with various indoor directional things for years. So it's great to hear that that's coming along. And I'm also excited about that you mentioned the 6-dot labeler, because I know they used the Kickstarter project to raise some funding for that device. And that's pretty exciting, because it's nice to see people who are interested in developing specialized products get involved in some of the mainstream fundraising that is available these days. So it's kind of neat that you all had a part in that as well.
That was very exciting. And I think they were very innovative in using Kickstarter. One of the other things that we also have the opportunity to do is to help with the development of apps and websites. And we've worked pretty closely with several companies, including Fidelity, for example, which has been helpful, I think, to them, but also to us, because we've had the opportunity to help them with the development of their iPhone app and their website. And it's also provided ViBug members with an opportunity not only to give input, but also to make a little money.
Making a little money is a great thing for people because, unfortunately, that's been one of the things I think that has been a bit of a problem in access technology is that it's been hard for people to find ways to even make a little bit of money sometimes, especially if you're involved in the research and the beta testing and so forth. And it'd be nice to see us get to a level of maturity where there is some money to be made for doing this kind of work.
Well, one of the things that I've done as president is that if people ask us to do things, I really will not necessarily publicize every survey and request for beta testers unless people will offer at least some kind of remuneration. I really think it's important that we be paid at least in some way, for our contributions. Because without them, the products that get developed and the websites that are maintained and altered are not as accessible and are not impacted. And we get many, many requests for us to volunteer. And although many of us are happy to do so, the constant requests for that can be daunting after a while. So I really do encourage folks to at least offer people transportation or pizza or something.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I've had a lot of instances during my time with Access Tech, which goes back really to the beginning of it in the 1970s, where it's a very different deal when you let people know that you're available for hire as a consultant or a trainer or perhaps a researcher or a beta tester. It's a very different deal, the kind of reception you get when you bring up the fact that you would love to do it and would love to help them improve their product, but you need to get paid for it. I think people are accustomed to having people volunteer, and don't get me wrong, volunteering is a great thing, but there are people who have developed skills and expertise in this area, and they need to be compensated for it, just like people are compensated for doing activities they have skills in any other area of life. So that is an interesting idea, and I'm glad to hear that you're supporting that philosophy in ViBug. That's a great thing. Well, you know, it sounds like one of the things maybe that you can tell me are possibly affecting all this at this point is that we have seen in the last few years much more emphasis coming from mainstream technologies. And I'm guessing that maybe people at MIT and maybe people around the country are just a bit more aware of access to technologies now, with Apple proving that mainstream technologies can be made accessible out of the box. And I'm curious, Amy, if you have any thoughts about that.
I certainly think that there are differences. And my experience has been that whenever there is some publicizing of mainstream access, whether it's a positive situation, such as we have with the Apple products and the iDevices and the Mac, or even a few years ago when NFB sued AOL back in the day, that whenever those kinds of news stories hit the mainstream, then there's much more interest in access technology and many more questions about how it works, how it can be advantageous, and what the needs are. I can remember when I first became president of ViBug, I was doing a presentation on online shopping, and it just so happened that the AOL lawsuit was publicized around that time, and we actually had a couple of reporters who came and watched my presentation. And we've had more recently, with all of the Apple accessibility, a lot more interest generated in access technology, many more questions that our members are fielding. I even had a call last week from a gentleman from ABC News who called me in response to some inquiries he had had, and also because he'd seen a couple of articles discussing the Apple accessibility on about.com, and I had been a person who was quoted in one of those articles. So he found his way to Vibug and then to me as a result of that.
Yeah, I can imagine that that's going to be happening even more. You know, it's got to be a good thing for the public to see us using our iPhones and iPads and Macs with VoiceOver and making use of that exact same piece of hardware that they're using and that they're excited about. And there's kind of a natural bridge that gets built there because they become curious, well, how are you doing that as a blind person? And to me, when that connection can be made, it moves us just a little bit further down the road of making accessibility just part of what we're about, as opposed to being something that's added on later or something that gets built on its own to make things accessible. So, I mean, to me, that makes this a really exciting time.
I definitely agree with you. I had a very interesting, I've had this happen several times, but I had a very interesting situation a few months ago. I was traveling to New Hampshire. There are two computer groups in New Hampshire with whom we have a bit of an affiliation, and I went to speak to one of them, got off the bus, of course, had my iPhone in hand, and when I got off the bus and went into the terminal, I was waiting for the person who was going to pick me up, and as I would normally do, I checked my email and my text messages, and a woman came up to me and asked me if that was a special iPhone. And I said, oh, no, you could make your iPhone talk as well. And I showed her how to do it. And before I knew it, there were four or five of us standing around in the bus terminal talking about which apps we used and how wonderful the iPhone was and what things we'd like to see added. And what I started to think about was how wonderful this was, not only in terms of access and in terms of social inclusion, but also what a powerful tool these devices have become, even for bridging the gap with an employer. My experience is that when you meet an employer, particularly if they don't know ahead of time, a potential employer, if they don't know ahead of time that you are blind, that you have about 3 or 4 minutes to help them get over the shock and help them to understand that you are more like them than you are different. And what a role these devices and the mainstream technologies play, I think, in bridging that gap.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is so funny, just the idea that VoiceOver is automatically built into these devices. Last year when my son was a senior in high school, we went to a talent show at his school, and a young woman in his class got up to do a dance, and she had her music on her iPod Touch, and when she plugged it into the sound system, VoiceOver immediately started talking, and she said, you know, I don't know what's wrong with my iPod Touch, but somehow it started talking to me all the time, and I don't know what to do about it, but sorry, you just have to live with it. And so, of course, my son was able to tell her, oh, that's VoiceOver, and I can tell you how to turn that off, and, you know, if you don't want it, and so forth. And so it's just so great that people are encountering this accessibility in all kinds of ways, and even occasionally if they don't want to. And I'm really okay with that. You know, it's just we've never had this situation before where technology was built in that would allow one to access a mainstream device right out of the box like that, at least not on the level that we're seeing these days. And to me, that's a wonderful thing. Yet at the same time, you know, I find myself in my work as a psychologist at the university here, I find myself using some of both. I find that I use the iOS and Apple technology a lot, but I also use some of the specialized technology. I especially use the devices, in particular from HIMSS. I use the Braille Sense devices, and because I find that they will give me access to my iPhone if I want it, because I can make a Bluetooth connection and can use the Braille display on the Braille Sense on hand to control my iPhone. And at the same time, I can choose not to do that, but have the advantage of the note-taking and information processing capabilities of the Braille device when that's more convenient or more handy. And I think what we're starting to see, you know, in some ways, which is a very good thing, we're starting to see some prices come down, and we're starting to see people build in some note-taking functions into Braille display devices, which makes them not full-fledged note-takers, but at the same time lets you take advantage of the capability of connecting to your smartphone, but still have some capabilities that can be used in a standalone mode. And so they can do that a bit more cheaply than just a fully specialized device that doesn't have that connectivity. And so it's a pretty exciting thing to see even the access technology vendors, who traditionally have had a very specialized market, begin to work their way toward coming toward the mainstream in a very real way with their products. And so that's one of the things that I was most interested in and most impressed about that seemed to be kind of a trend this year at the CSUN conference that just took place. And I was curious whether you were particularly enthralled by anything that you heard about from CSUN, or what you thought about access technology and its newest form at CSUN this year.
I think Apple has really been a game changer for the blind community, in that I think people are no longer willing just to spend exorbitant amounts of money to acquire a lot of specialized technology if it's not necessary, or if they can somehow, you know, get along with something that provides similar functionality but at a lower cost. And that's certainly one of the attractive things about the Apple products, is that you pay the same thing, the same price as anybody else does. I know my prior cell phones, which were accessible, cost me quite a bit more because I had to buy the screen reader and upgrade the screen reader. And until a couple of years ago, it was tied to the cell phone, and I had an unfortunate accident with one of my cell phones and had to buy the screen reader all over again. So I think Apple has certainly changed the game. Having said all that, I think that the proprietary technologies certainly have an important place. I think particularly in the education market, I still don't think we're quite at the stage yet where young students in particular can easily just use a mainstream technologies. And I'm delighted that that some of the companies who make Braille displays and GPS products, for example, have started to do more to interface with the mainstream technologies so that the prices can be brought down and so that people have more choices in how much they use proprietary devices and in how much they use mainstream technology in concert and in combination with those devices.
With the Apple and iOS products, we've come a long way with accessibility in a very short period of time, and that is exciting. At the same time, though, there are still some hurdles to jump and still some levels of maturity to be reached, I think, especially when it comes to Braille accessibility. I've seen Braille display access get better and better with iOS, but there are bumps in the road, and unfortunately, my products of choice, as I said, the HIMSS products, are broken now with iOS version 5.1. Something happened with the driver, and at this point with 5.1, you do have access on your Braille display with what's on the phone. When you touch the screen on the phone to change something, it shows up on the display, but all the access that you had in earlier versions of iOS straight from the Braille keyboard are broken in this revision. But it's really a maturing process, and it's, of course, frustrating for all of us who need this access, but we're still in a stage or a place where things are being developed, things are improving, things are being fixed, and occasionally something is broken along the way in that evolution process. And of course, it will be fixed, and they will update iOS, and the problem will be resolved. No doubt about that. No one knows exactly when that will happen, but that puts people in a tough position who need that access. And that's one of the reasons I think that we need to be flexible right now and have alternative strategies for doing things. You know, it's probably not best, especially like you said, if you're a student and maybe a young student, you maybe need two or three ways to do something. And I'm assuming it's pretty hard for trainers and consultants these days, in some cases, to know how to recommend things to people. What's your take on things, Amy, in terms of in the training area at this point? What is that like these days?
I think the training has become even more of a challenge, and for several reasons. One of the values, I think, of a group like ViBug, and I'm sorry that there aren't more of them. There certainly used to be more groups around the country than I've been able to find still. But one of the values, I think, of a group like ViBug is the ability to give technical support and assistance to members. We have a members-only list where people can ask questions between meetings. We have a question and answer period at every meeting where people can pose questions. And I think that the training landscape has gotten much more complicated, both because of the plethora of products in all categories, and also because of the fact that many people want quick answers to their questions. They want simple answers. And often, the answers are much more complex. As much as I'm enamored of the evolution that Apple has spurred, I'm hesitant too for anyone not to look at their needs first. And I think a lot of people jump into products either because they're recommended by a rehab person or because their friend down the street has it without necessarily looking at what they need. And I think there's a lot of hardware and software out there that many people still don't know how to use. And one of the things that I'm frequently asked is, well, which product should I buy? And my constant response is, what do you want to do? And how do you learn? And those are questions that many people don't immediately ask. And I think that remains one of the biggest challenges. The other challenge is that it's hard as a consultant and a trainer to keep up with all of the changes and all of the new technologies that are coming around.
Absolutely.
I find that I would say 10 years ago, I probably knew at least something about, if not every product, most of them. And now I certainly can't say that because there are just so many things to learn and so many changes that come about as companies come into the market and as companies develop new products.
Yeah, the changes happen so quickly that it's a huge challenge for trainers and technology enthusiasts to keep up. I think I'm subscribed to 50-some podcasts, and I try to listen to as many of those. Most of them are weekly or bi-weekly podcasts, and most of them are technology oriented. Of course, I listen to a lot of Apple and Mac and iOS type podcasts, but there's a lot to learn and a lot to keep up with. And you know, we're really seeing, just like in the mainstream, we're seeing everybody wanting to move to the smartphone technology, and we're seeing people, of course, very excited about Apple and the iPhone and what they've done with their products. But we're also seeing people wanting to move into the Android space, and that is exciting to me, and I think it's great that Apple has some competition. It's great that people don't have to put all their eggs in one basket, but I find that it's very hard for me to keep up with what's going on in the Android area. We all learn differently. We all have different ideas about what we want from a device, from a product. And for one person, it may be a great thing. For another person, it doesn't do that, doesn't read that spreadsheet that they so desperately need, or doesn't allow that sophisticated level of word processing that they need that I may not have a need for. And so it may be great for me, but not so great for them. And it's really hard to take all those things in consideration when you sit down with somebody and try to help them make a good decision like that. So, I mean, it's really a tough area to be involved in right now.
I think one of the things that helps a bit is the number of podcasts that are available. I, too, am subscribed to quite a number, and I cannot keep up. So I think that the good thing is that if people actually take the time to listen to the podcasts and to read the reviews on AppleVis, for example, just that provides people with a lot of information. However, I think there's such a lot of information that many people become overwhelmed, and so they don't necessarily do their homework sometimes, and I think then people can run into trouble. I also think that for myself, I too have not been able to keep up with the Android development, and part of that is because, unlike when I first started with Access Technology years ago, at that time, I wanted to learn anything and everything. I wanted to download the newest update of everything. And now, that enthusiasm for the new and novel has been replaced with a little more reticence and with the realization that I just don't have the time to do it all. So I have to pick and choose.
Sounds like you've had your devices crash also, huh?
Exactly.
We do learn over the years to be a bit careful. I think that there is a really interesting situation going on these days where I find myself wanting access to more mainstream things. And one thing I would use as an example is, for years, and I know you share some enthusiasm for this, for years I've been a big college basketball fan. I've always been interested in getting as much access as possible to March Madness, which is going on right now. And the unfortunate thing has been that I wanted not TV access, but radio access, because I wanted to hear the play-by-play of those games. And it's always been hit and miss what I could find on a regular terrestrial radio. Satellite radio has been a bit hit and miss over the years as well. Sometimes they've carried more of it than other times. But this year I have discovered that there is an iPhone app. There are actually a couple of them. The NCAA March Madness app is, while not perfectly accessible, is sufficiently accessible to allow me to be able to listen to every one of the 64 games that are going on this weekend if I had time and the wherewithal to do that. But at least I can choose which ones I want to listen to. It doesn't matter if it's college basketball or what it is. More and more, I feel like I want access to what everybody else is excited about and interested in. And I think we're starting to see more of that happen. And to me, that's a very exciting thing and makes it well worth the effort that it takes to learn to use this new technology. And that's the reason I so promote everyone trying to find out through talking to people, through maybe attending some meetings, conventions, Vibug, perhaps going to your state rehabilitation center, or finding some way to get your hands on some of this technology and really try to figure out what can work for you, because there is so much out there. You know, when I really stop and think about it, the things that I do just on my iPhone every day are really pretty incredible. I mean, everything from listening to radio broadcasts to reading email to enjoying Twitter, on and on and on. And I really hate to think that there are people out there missing out because they're not aware of or haven't gotten involved in some of these technologies. So that's the reason I feel a lot of passion about it.
I agree. I have over 100 apps on my phone, my iPhone, and I do so many things now with it, and it's so portable, and I'm constantly excited by new apps. We've had several meetings, of course, devoted to the iOS platform, and at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, we did an iPhone extravaganza, and I had about 30 people in the room at 9 o'clock in the morning, ready and willing and excited to talk about iPhone and iPhone devices and to demonstrate apps and so forth. The things I think also that this affords us is an opportunity to advocate. I'm frequently will download an app, and if it's not accessible, can then write to the developer and tell them that it's not accessible and give them a bit of education. And many, many developers are very willing to try to make changes. And I think that's an exciting and important opportunity that we need to take advantage of, and that I hope people really use as a vehicle for education and improvement. There have been several apps that I know people have written to the developers about, and with some wonderful results.
Yeah, I really agree with that. That's been my experience too. And I think my experience, ironically, has been more positive with the smaller developers. And so many of the iOS and Apple developers are one or two person teams that work independently. And this is how they make their living, or a lot of their living, and they're very lean in the sense that you don't have to go through a great corporate structure to get to them, and they're very willing to listen and very interested in making their apps appeal to as many people as possible, including people who are visually impaired and blind. I think I've had somewhat less success, honestly, with some of the really big developers.
I've had a similar experience with some notable exceptions. Major League Baseball has been very responsive in making their app more accessible.
You are right. Kudos to MLB for what they've done. They've done a great job.
Yeah, that's a notable exception. But I agree with you. And I think one of the caveats, as excited as I am about the iOS platform, one of the caveats that I continue to be concerned about is that Apple has changed the restrictions on developers a bit, and I think afforded them more opportunity to stray from the guidelines and still have their apps accepted. And so I'm going to continue to watch the development of apps, and particularly as cameras get better and the ability to use images gets better, because I wonder what the landscape is going to be a few years from now. I'm not pessimistic, but I'm wary. Let's put it that way.
Well, it is true, in my opinion at least, that Apple has devoted more of its energy of late in its current products to graphics and to strictly visual aspects of the products. We saw that with the iPhone 4S and the display, and we've seen it now with the new iPad that just was announced last week. And so it doesn't worry me too much. I think they're still very committed to accessibility, but I do agree with you that the real problem we have is how many of these new, not just the apps themselves, but how many of the new interfaces and technologies that they're going to be developing are going to be so visual that they are very difficult to make accessible. And I think we do have to be at least wary and be paying attention to that so that we can offer input and feedback. I don't think it's going to be all smooth sailing from here.
And that's similar to the way websites have developed. if you think about it, at least in my experience, because there are websites that I go to that were accessible, you know, 6 months ago that now are much more difficult to use. The internet and technology in general is ever evolving. And so I think that's why it's very important that we be vigilant and proactive in a positive way to try to impress upon the developer community how important it is to continue to make apps and websites and these technologies in general accessible.
Well, that really kind of leads me into the next thing that I wanted to talk about for a few minutes, which is, what is it, do you think, that people who are blind and visually impaired are needing from developers and needing from the technology community at large that maybe we aren't getting, or that maybe we don't have at this point?
Well, as I said earlier, I think certainly we need assistance with indoor navigation. One of the things that I'm very concerned about and continue to try to bring to people's attention anytime that I can is the unemployment rate and the need for more blind people to become employed. And one of the things, I've been fortunate, I've worked all my life, and one of the things that I remember, though, from going to job interviews was that I often didn't have time to get anxious about the job interview itself, because I had to deal with the trauma of trying to find the building, find the room, find the correct desk, and to do it with grace and independence and some kind of smooth presence. And so I think that indoor navigation is a real important thing. Probably the development of even better and portable GPS, both for indoor and outdoor navigation. I think one of the things that we also need is to deal with the issues that are presented by dynamic content. We need developers to work more on maintaining accessibility and building accessibility into dynamically changing web pages. I think that the PDF files, although more accessible than they sometimes are, have been in the past, are still a tremendous challenge. And I also think that we need to work to have more accessibility built in at the base level of every program, so that it is not an option, but a built-in component. I, for example, work in an environment where we often get PowerPoint presentations that are sent in conjunction with a training that we're going to attend. And those are virtually useless to me because, of course, the people who are preparing these don't have any clue about how to make them accessible. And because accessibility is an adjunct, it makes it much more likely that I'm going to be unable to access it.
Right. So I agree with you on that. It seems to me that really we're pretty unique as a group of people, given our situation of being visually impaired or blind, in that we aren't as limited in our ability to access, to get to a facility. Yes, we do have transportation issues, and yes, we do have problems locating a room, and so certainly we need better indoor navigation, no question about it. But unlike what has been the emphasis so much during my lifetime has been, I think, the access to the physical buildings, you know, wheelchair ramps, and the ability for people to get to the building is really what a lot of people think of as disability access. And I think people are less cognizant of, or spend less time thinking about, what I really need even more than access to the physical facility, I need access to information. And information access has not been nearly, at least in my experience at my university and in the meetings that I attend and the things that I do, people are much more likely to offer me some assistance getting into the room than they are to automatically offer me an accessible handout of the presentation. And so we really need to move forward on, as you say, making information accessible from the ground up. And I think there are some ways to begin doing that. Certainly it is interesting that the PDF situation has gone on the way that it has, that the CAPTCHA situation has gone on the way that it has, that PowerPoints and traditional visual access, you know, and so people are making some inroads into making online meetings more accessible. You know, with accessible event from Ceratec, for example, and things like that, working toward moving in that direction. But it seems like the next big frontier, at least in my mind, for people who are blind and visually impaired is access to information and access to indoor navigation. We need some way of being able to walk through the mall and identify what those stores are that we're passing. That kind of access really needs to be worked on, I think.
I agree, and I think that one of the concerns that we have been expressing at ViBug last week, for example, we had a group of attorneys from the Disability Law Center in Massachusetts come and talk with us about Facebook. And Facebook is a very powerful social medium, and it's being used more and more, not only just for casual conversations, but by employers and by all sorts of organizations. And access to something like Facebook is a challenge at best. You know, sometimes it works better than others, and there are some areas that work better than others. But I think that's another glaring example of something that has not been as accessible as it needs to be. And Facebook is such a powerful and important tool now for people that I think we need to look at those kinds of forums as well, because increasingly that's the way people are communicating.
Yeah, you're right. And I personally have not chosen to get very involved with Facebook, and I feel a bit left out, I think, more and more when people refer to something on Facebook. Of course, I sometimes go look at something if I get a link or something like that, but I don't have a Facebook account myself. I participate heavily in Twitter, and I think that's been a really great social networking opportunity for people, but it's like we were saying earlier, you know, it's becoming more and more complicated to really keep up with what's going on, and you probably need to be involved in two or three social networking arenas to really have a good perspective on what the options and possibilities are. And I don't know how many of us can really do that, but it's a good goal, I guess.
I agree. I don't have a Facebook account either. I used to have one. I got very concerned about the privacy settings and shut it off. And I'm still old-fashioned enough to use other means of communication, even something as old-fashioned as a phone call. But I think we're going to need to really continue the efforts to advocate for access that is built in from the beginning and that is continued. One of the things that I think many of us face, and that I'm facing currently, is that when you're on the job, sometimes the programs that you have to work with are quite proprietary and can require some pretty complex scripting to get them to work. And I think that's quite unfortunate and something that's not particularly changing for the better. In every job I've had over the last 10 years almost, I have had proprietary programs that I've needed to use, which has required the expertise of a scripter.
Yes, and sometimes scripting is just unavoidable, but it also can easily lead to a lot of frustration because every time that software changes, the script potentially breaks, and that's a real problem.
Exactly, and not everyone has the availability of a scripter who has the expertise and can be paid for it. We're fortunate in Massachusetts in that we have a very talented person who does extensive scripting. And so I feel very fortunate to live where I am, but I know in other parts of the country that's not necessarily the case.
Absolutely, and that really is a problem that I think we're going to have to address. And it does speak also to the divide that we see between accessibility that's built on after the fact versus accessibility built in from the ground up. And I really hope we're going to start moving more in the built in from the ground up direction. I see some evidence of that, but like you say, there's plenty of proprietary software out there that has to be scripted, and that continues to be a problem.
Having said all that, though, as I think about it, when I look at the number of things that I'm able to do now that I couldn't do, say, 15 years ago, totally independently, it's just a very exciting time. And
absolutely.
I feel very fortunate to have the tools that I have to do many of the things I want to accomplish.
You can go get that March Madness app right now. And
I have it.
You have it. Okay.
I do. Yeah. I do. I have it. It's so exciting. But it is a bit of a challenge to jump through those hoops, literally and figuratively. I guess that's what keeps me excited, is that there is just so much more access to information and the ability to, for the first time when I got my iPhone 4S, took it out of the box, no one had touched it, to just know enough to hit that home key 3 times, have it come up talking, and to the opportunity to be able to set it up completely independently was still just magical for me.
Oh, yeah, I'm still excited about that. And it's true for the iOS devices, and it's also true for the Mac, which is really a great thing that you can take one out of the box and set it up. You can reinstall the operating system if you have to. I've done all of that completely without sighted assistance, and it's very exciting to have a platform like that.
And I also was, I think perhaps for one of the first times, at least in recent memory, able to educate my children. I have young adult children who, of course, know much more about everything than I do.
Of course.
And they got iPhones after I did. And so for the first time in a long time, I was able to teach them some things about the iPhone, which was a wonderful novelty for me.
Oh, it's a great thing. And we do, that happens in my family as well. And so that just really has turned the whole paradigm on its head in some ways, just how exciting it is that we can be very involved with this mainstream technology in very much the same way, or at least in a very similar manner to the way that our sighted family members are making use of it. And it's just a whole different deal than it was when we were using very specialized technology to accomplish some of these things. Well, we're just about getting to the end here. We've spent about an hour with, I think, a great conversation about some of these issues. I just wonder, Amy, if there's anything you would like to add here at the end, if you have any additional contact information other than ViBug you'd like to give people. I don't know whether you do or not, or if there's anything else you'd like to say, just kind of in closing.
Sure. I would be happy to give out my contact information if anybody has questions or wants to contact me. My email address is arull@comcast.net. And if you have additional questions or comments, or if there's a resource that someone is looking for, I would be glad to help in any way that I can. And again, this has just been a delightful hour, and I've appreciated the opportunity to share both information and also perspective with you.
Well, great, Amy. It's been fun having you here, and hope we'll do it again sometime. And for anyone who would like to get in touch with me, the easiest way to do that through the podcast address is to send an email to techdoctor123@gmail.com. And until next time, so long from the Tech Doctor.